listening to The Burn. Gaming stuff, blazing fast.
Welcome to a new episode of The Burn, a podcast about gaming done blazing fast. I'm Aviv Manoach.
And I'm Yehuda Chalfon.
Good, how are you? You are distinctly not Omer Kaplan.
I am not Omer Kaplan, I'm Yehuda Chalfon, and I come from the big boy podcast that we have, our mother podcast, sister podcast.
I call it sister, I call it sister. Not big boy, what is a big boy podcast?
I don't know, we have more things there. Everybody in the university is always complaining, you're recording a podcast that we don't understand. It's like, okay, let's bring back the English-speaking podcast.
Yes, indeed. my friends from my former place of employment would join the stream when we do game burning and tell me, like, we don't understand anything in Hebrew, but from time to time you say a word in English and that we do understand. we haven't done The Burn for quite a while. I think, 8 months, something like that. Omer got a new job and it became hectic to do those, so we didn't. Yehuda approached me and offered to pick this back up. So we are doing this. The format is the same. We're going to talk about the game and gaming news, and we're going to enjoy it because we like talking about games.
Yes.
So first thing first, the opening, as we say in each episode of the show, we discuss the game that we played and liked or disliked sometimes, and then current news topics. You can subscribe to the podcast at theburn.live, and if you like to support us, we have a brand new support page. It's at support.theburn.live. You can find our affiliate offers there. And also, if you're listening from the US mainly, you will find there some gaming task that you can complete, and we get a kick out of it. So if you play, I think there are, I don't remember, there is some Blitz there and a bunch of mobile games. So you install them, you play a while, the page will tell you how much, and then we get a few bucks out of it, and you do as well. So it's a nice new thing. And then you can also join the Discord community at discord.theburn.live, where you can listen live to those recordings in our stage channel, recording booth. This is the opening. So today we are going to talk about Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order in anticipation of the sequel that's going to come out in April. Was supposed to come out in March, but it was delayed. And this is Yuda's game. So Yuda, you're going to start.
So I chose this game because I really liked it, and Aviv was just buying it, I think, a month ago or something like that.
I bought it again on the PlayStation. I already played it once on PC when it came out.
Yeah, so I was like, and we never talked about it in the Burn, so yeah, let's talk about it. And it's free in the Game Pass if you have the Ultimate or EA Access or whatever it's called.
Have the second subscription level, which include the EA Access, and you get all the EA games.
Yeah. And so I was like, I have, because I have Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, because it costs nothing. It's free, and I played it once on the PlayStation 4, and now I'm playing it again on the Xbox Series X. So I wanted to compare also the versions between the controllers. It's completely different, and the game mechanics is the same, and I'm playing the same difficulty level, which is Jedi Knight, I think it's the middle one.
Yeah, it's the second one. It goes story mode, Jedi Knight, Jedi Master, and then Jedi Grandmaster.
Yes, so I play Jedi Knight, which is basically quasi Souls game, and I like it. And I have to admit, the game is the same. It doesn't feel different at all between the two versions. What I do find interesting in the Xbox version, the game loads so fast that sometimes you have things in the background that didn't load as fast as when you go there. So it reminds me of after you install World of Warcraft on an SSD, you get to a location and you sit in the darkness and then the environment loads next to you because the movement is on the SSD, but the servers were not fast enough to send you the data. So it's something like that, because especially when you crawl in areas, which I think is to help with the loading times. So when you crawl in the game, when it was initially released for the old generation of consoles, PlayStation 4 and Xbox, One?
Yeah, One.
I think. Xbox is weird. I don't know the names anymore.
One, and then the upgraded version was Series S, I think.
No, Series S and Series X is the same.
There was Xbox One Series something. They started with the Series thing in the that was the upgraded Xbox Ones, and then now we have a Series X and S.
That's annoying.
Yes,
except PlayStation is like 1, 2, 3, 4 Pro and 5. That's it.
Yes,
it's fine. It's working, and so in the old consoles, you had the crawling scenes where you shimmied around places or crawl in the cave and things like that. That was the loading, gives the game enough time to load itself.
The same as Kratos lifting heavy rocks in God of War.
Yeah. And also like the elevator scenes in Mass Effect and things like that. So here you in the new version, in the Xbox Series X, you crawl through the thing so fast that you get to a room and then you see the room is a room, but then you can see the high definition feature starts to appear next to you. So it always makes me giggle.
It's interesting. It's interesting that you mentioned that, because I haven't noticed any of those things on the PS5 version. I don't know.
Maybe it's optimization or something.
Yeah, of course it's optimization, but the question is, where did they put more optimization? Is the faster loading on the Xbox the better version, or the I don't notice it on PlayStation the better version?
I always prefer the fastest loading. I don't know why, but I do. So you can see it. It's funny. And now I can, because I play the game in the PlayStation 4 controller, now I play with the Xbox controller, I can clearly feel the difference between the two controllers. I have the normal Xbox controller, not the Super Elite, whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. It is heavier, it's nicer. I feel like I control the character better. The main difference between the two controllers is that the PlayStation controller has the thumb thingies in the same level, while in the Xbox it's diagonally.
Yep.
And it feels much nicer with the diagonally, and I enjoy the shit out of it. One thing I have to say about this game that also appears in the Souls game, there are bosses, the boss fights you're supposed to lose to, and the game lets you try to fight them. So it's always funny to see people play Sekiro or Demon Souls games and things like that and defeat the first boss, and then there is a cutscene that forces you the defeat.
Mm-hmm.
And it also happens here. So the first two times where you meet the second sister, you're supposed to lose to her. But I played so many Dark Souls games that I always defeat her. And then when you get to half health, she's like, I will first push you through that wall and something will happen. And then she's like, if that robot will not interfere, I will defeat you. Dude, I annihilated you. You didn't hit me once. What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, but it's also weird because the way they convey that character... also Ninth Sister, but less so. all their moves in battle seem so much more powerful than Kyle Kestis. Like, even by the end of the game, where you get all of your force powers, they have better powers than you. You basically defeat them because you play with the lightsaber better and nothing else. And, like, in, I don't want to say in reality because none of it is real, but, like, rationally, they could have crushed you with their force powers and don't give you enough time to lift your lightsaber.
Yeah.
Which is, well, did you get to the end of the game, by the way?
I finished it twice.
Okay, so, okay, great. Now, I didn't want to spoil you. I don't care about spoil the other people that listen. So, spoilers, the only actual, like, realistic scene that's happening is by the end of the game where you face Darth Vader and the game is like, no, you have no chance of fighting him. You need to run away.
Yeah. So this is something I like because it makes more sense for me that, oh, fuck, that's Vader. He is a badass. He's probably the best lightsaber duelist in the world, in the galaxy, technically.
Yeah.
I don't even try. I run away. And I think this is a better version of how to force you to lose, I'm air quoting here, a fight than just, I defeated you because I'm a better actor. So now a player, and now there is a cutscene of how you lost. Mm-hmm. So the most annoying thing about all of them is Sakuro. So the game starts, you fight against one of the bosses, you fight him against later during the game, and he cuts off your hand because the entire, one of the biggest shticks of Sakuro is that you have a grappling hand and you can fire hooks and do cool things with it. And he cuts off your hand and then it leaves you to die in the field and someone finds you and gives you a nice mechanical hand. If you defeat him, out of nowhere, there is an archer that comes and fires at you and takes your hand off. Like, what the fuck? They'll just put a nice cutscene when I lose my hand, no matter what I do in the fight, and it's fine. It's better.
Yeah, that's really not the right way to handle it. Elden Ring does a good job with its first, like, it's not a boss, but it's like the first enemy you face is like an enemy that, the first time you play the game, you have no chance of winning. But if you play the game later, you actually can, or if you are very good and have played a lot of Souls games, you can defeat the first enemy that's supposed to kill you, and then you get its unique weapons, and then you have them for the rest of the game, and it's cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, and also in Bloodborne, they did the same thing that you wake up in the asylum and there is a werewolf immediately outside the door. And you don't have any weapon in that instance because in Bloodborne, you don't choose a class. And some players defeat that werewolf with their fists. And then you
can... I did.
Nice. And then you can keep going without visiting the dream. And I think I saw a playthrough one time of someone that didn't know anything about Bloodborne, and they beat the werewolf, didn't visit the dream, and were like, okay, where do I get weapons? Because in Bloodborne, you don't get any items anywhere at the beginning of the game.
Yep. Yeah, the first time I played Bloodborne, I, of course, lost to the thing. And then a few months or whatever later, I watched a playthrough from, now he's not doing it anymore, but my favorite Souls streamer. And he said, let's try to sneak up on this werewolf. And apparently the sneak attack works even though you don't have weapons. So I was like, new game, let's try. And I went there and I killed the werewolf and was like, yes, I did it. I'm like, oh, fuck, no, I have no weapons. What the fuck do I do now? I go outside the door and like,
Yeah, you need to keep playing
Something else will kill me.
You can keep playing until the first lantern and then you can go to the dream.
Yeah, but it's hard. I just die. I sacrifice myself to something. Yeah. But for the challenge, I defeated the werewolf without anything.
So we are approaching the end of this segment, but let's go over on a few details about Fallen Order. So beside the fact that in higher difficulties, it acts like a Souls game in the combat, especially Sekiro, because it depends heavily on parrying. It also has the same respawn for monsters, which in the context, I said it a bunch of times, in the context of Star Wars, it's really weird that everything respawns every time you rest. Like, all of the Souls game has an excuse of why that is. The weakest excuse is Sekiro, but it's still there. But for all of them, there is like a low reason why people keep reviving. But in Star Wars, there is no in-game reason. There is no diegetic reason for it. It's just a gameplay mechanic, and it annoys me. And then there is also the XP mechanic, which is similar to Souls. If you haven't gained a level, you will lose your XP when you die. But if you have, you will only lose the corresponding XP for the new level. So you can keep your skill points, but not like the new XP that you gain. The game is fairly what's the word I'm looking for? Generous with skill points.
Yeah.
Like I find that.
Yeah. Oh, damn it! It's you have so many skill points in the game.
Yeah. They give you.
You get more.
They give you more skill points than you need for each section of the game because the skill progression is segregated behind story gating. So you get to a point where you don't have anywhere to place the skills until you progress the story, which is a bit annoying. But yeah.
Yeah, so that was weird because like, I have skill points. What the fuck do I do with them?
Yep.
Why? There's no reason. I mean, they could maybe do it, give you like in upgrade. So let's say you get an extra bonus for dealing more damage because the tree splits into health, lightsaber, and force. So maybe a little bit more damage or faster recovery outside of combat and things like that, because otherwise, like, I have nothing to do with it.
Yep. Yeah, beside that, my least favorite game part of the game is the sliding parts, both the ice one and the mud ones. They are really easy to botch and fail off, especially where they combine the sliding parts with freeze this wheel parts that you need to freeze them and then jump through them and stuff like that. And a bunch of the time, the jumping is not precise enough. And I had the same complaint both when I played with the keyboard and mouse and now when I'm playing with the controller. I know that you specifically don't like the puzzles in the game.
Yes. I mean, I like puzzles in games. I really like the puzzles in Breath of the Wild.
Mm-hmm.
But here the puzzles feels like, oh, you do actually jump, you fly in the air. You know? Then,
oh, you mean, okay.
Is the third ball?
Yeah, the movement-based puzzles, it's the same complaint I have with the sliding parts. I agree with you. I do like the, like, force manipulation puzzle part of it, although some of them rely too much on the physics engine and it's a bit finicky.
Yeah.
But in general, it's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you played, and I recommend everyone go and play, if you played Titanfall 2, there are some puzzles that are lifted verbatim from Titanfall into Jedi, mainly those puzzles with the wind that force you to jump not in a straight line, but the wind blow you to the side. So they are the exact same puzzles in Titanfall 2.
I love this game so much.
Yeah.
I forgot how much I love Jedi Fallen Order.
And we'll get a new one.
And we... Yeah, in 2 months and 14 days, but who's counting? I'm not counting anything.
Apparently you.
I have a lot of dates in my head now that I keep counting them, and this is one of the happy ones. And the nice thing is also a week before that Armor Wars is coming out for the Switch. So, yeah.
Nice. Cool. So let's do news now. I have a few items that I brought. So first of all, the for your information part of the news, Double Fine, Double Fine Documentary 2, which they released. It's a bit of a humor around that, because the original Double Fine documentary for Double Fine Adventure was one of the first like big documentary series of like the concurrent period before NoClip and stuff like that. So when if you remember back in the day when Kickstarter was very popular for video games, Double Fine Adventure was the first like major successful Kickstarter, and they one of the stretch goals was a documentary series, and they released it. At the beginning it was on like some a very obscure platform that only the backers get, and then I think at one time it was even on Netflix or something, and now it's on YouTube, so you can go watch it. So that was on Broken Age, which was originally Double Fine Adventure. And now they release a new series, which is for Psychonauts 2. So there is 32 episode, 20 plus hours documentary series. And that's amazing. I love game development documentary series. The Double Fine Adventure 1, as well as the Pillar of Eternity 1, were both very inspirational for me. I haven't watched the Psychonauts 1 yet. To be honest, I haven't played any of the Psychonauts games, so I don't even know what to expect from it, but I will probably watch it because I just love people talking about game development. So that's a thing that happened. Other than that, on the news, a news that comes out from the deliberation around the Microsoft Activision Blizzard merger. If you haven't heard, Microsoft tried, there is a deal for Microsoft to buy Activision Blizzard, which at first we thought would go along well, but then pretty much everyone started questioning if this merger is actually a good thing from a business perspective, a business regulation perspective, stuff like that. So now Microsoft is at court in pretty much every major Western market, Australia, UK, European Union. Now the newest one is in the US. The US originally was like the most lax one. They were like, whatever. But now that everyone else is thinking about blocking it, the U.S. Piled on as well. So there are deliberations, and one of the documents that were disclosed in this deliberation is Microsoft analyzed game sales versus Game Pass subscriptions, and now their analysis claimed that Game Pass cannibalizes sales, which is in contrast to the original claim a year ago, where Phil Spencer said that people playing on Game Pass make more people buy the game because it gives it more exposure. But now we see that when people go and play it on Game Pass, they don't go and buy the game, which is like logical, but you know.
Yeah.
So... what we don't know, and we probably will never know unless some developer will blow apart their deal with Microsoft is, do the revenue the developers get from the Game Pass deal is enough to compensate for that or not? Like, obviously Microsoft is the big winner here because they get money from the subscriptions no matter what. But the question is this in favor of the developers or not? Which we don't know. We started with like an ambivalence on the subject when it came up. Like, obviously Game Pass is really good for the players, but if we don't give money to developers, eventually there will be no games to play. So we want developers to actually earn money and develop games.
And make more games.
Yes. So this whole situation is a bit weird, and we'll see what happens next. So that's about that news item. And then the next one, the final one, is EA is closing in on a deal with Premier League. And I found that interesting because, like, a year ago, I think, before EA FIFA 23 was released, which was one of the best-selling FIFA games of the series, EA and FIFA parted ways. FIFA basically decided they don't want to work with EA anymore. EA decided they don't want to be associated with the corruption in FIFA anymore. And they parted ways. And from the FIFA perspective, in my opinion, it was a very stupid move because FIFA were like, yeah, we'll build our own game, football game. And we are sitting here like, okay, but who will do that for you? Like, EA has been developing sports game for 30 years. Who is going to do this for you now? And from the other end of the situation and what we see now, EA, all they need to do is like close a deal with another brand and stamp it on their engine, and that's it. So that's what they're doing. It won't be FIFA Football 24. It will be the Premier League Football 24 or whatever it will be. Now, obviously, this means they won't have all the soccer team. Sorry, football team. Why did they turn American suddenly? I don't know. if anything, Omer is not here, so we don't have any US representatives anymore. Yuda is in England, so we need to do it properly. So it's football. So obviously they won't have all the football teams in the world. So you won't be able to buy the next EA football game and play your favorite Israeli football team or whatever. But you will have the Premier League. Obviously, as far as the articles I read phrase it, it seems like it's only a part of their plan. So they may negotiate with many different leagues in the world. So instead of going through FIFA, they are going directly to the clubs. So that it's going to be interesting anyway. I don't play a sports game anymore, but I used to when I was younger. And that market is obviously very big and very popular. So
I have one friend that I play with the sports game. He buys all of them all the time. I'm like, yeah, good for you. And he's like, let's play a game. Like, yeah, okay, I'm here anyway. So
the thing is with the sports game scene is that most sports gamers play only that. Like, they buy their $60-$70 once a year. They may buy the expansion DLC packs, whatever. So they spend $100 a year on their sports game, and that's it. They don't play other games. So that makes sense for them and for the entire space and stuff. It's not like we play a new indie game or AAA game or whatever every month or every other week or whatever. We probably spend a lot more money on those games.
Gaming is expensive.
Well, you paint miniature. You have a more expensive game.
It's hobby. Gaming. It's still gaming.
That's true. That's true. But yeah, but you know,
also play Magic. It's also expensive.
That's also true. But it's a hobby.
Yeah,
I think that the least expensive gaming hobby is role playing game.
Yeah.
Especially if you are one of those that play the same system all the time and don't buy new games. Yeah. And even if you buy new games, like a game book, especially if you buy it digital, is like $10 and you don't need anything else. And you need only one copy for the entire group.
Yeah, so this is what I'm going to say. Most for the role-playing games, you buy one copy for the group. So you can, even if you want a physical copy, you just have maybe all the group by pitching together and buy one copy.
Yeah, we can do that. Okay, that was on the news, and this is all we have on the show today. Thank you for listening. You can find us online on Twitter. I'm at Isel, and Yuda is at Yushuv. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, comment, and leave your reviews on your preferred listening app. You can find all of the links at theburn.live. And our opening theme was created by Ann Durko and vocals by Fishy Twitch. You can find both of them on Twitter as well. Thank you very much. And until next time.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.